This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. I'm your host, Karen Vergara, a senior journalist at Financial Standard. Alternative assets are forecast to grow to $29.2 trillion US dollars by 2029, according to Preqin. Private equity, private credit, and real estate in particular were once the domain of institutional and rich investors. This is no longer the case in 2025. So to explain how alternatives are undergoing a seismic shift in demand, we have joining us today Navigator Global Investments Chief Investment Officer, Russ Zachary. Thank you so much for your time and all the way from New York.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, Russ, let's talk about Navigator first. It's an ASX-listed company. It has US $87 billion in assets under management, or $132 billion in Australian dollar terms. Tell us a little bit about the business.
So Navigator's mission is to bring our strategic capital and expertise to established but fast-growing alternative asset management firms and be a long-term value-add partner to them over time and allow them to grow and generate the best results for their clients. We believe doing that out of the corporate vehicle, which is Navigator, allows us to align our interests very closely with the firms and allows us to evolve alongside of them as their businesses grow and evolve over time.
Is it correct to say it's a multi-boutique model? If not, so what are the differences?
It's a bit different. So when we think of the multi-boutique model, the original model was as simple as we allow investors to focus on, or the multi-boutique provider allows investors to focus on what they're best at investing and helps out with everything else, whether that be middle and back office, marketing, distribution, legal, regulatory compliance, et cetera. Navigator approaches this from almost the other side of the spectrum, where our firms are self-sufficient in their own right. They have their own internal client-facing teams, their own internal legal and compliance experts, et cetera, to support their business. But they're really looking for a partner to add growth capital and help accelerate other growth plans. Our view is that in the alternative asset management sector, the largest asset allocators in the institutional market, as well as increasingly in the wealth management sector, are looking for independent firms that will grow and really be the most specialized in what they do over time. So it doesn't lend itself to the old version of multi-boutique quite as directly.
And just to be clear, the firms that you partner with are typically in the private credit and private equity space?
We're focusing across all of alternatives. We have partner firms in hedge funds, both multi-strategy and single-strategy hedge funds. We have partner firms in different areas of specialized private credit, to your point, specialized private equity, as well as real estate. And as we look to grow, we think that diversifying across the alternative asset management sector will allow us to generate the strongest returns for shareholders over time.
So Ross, let's take a step back now and talk about alternatives broadly, because they have grown so strongly in Australia and overseas in recent years. What is the driving force behind this, do you think?
So we see several driving forces that have both driven the growth of the asset class to date and will continue into the future. I think the first thing, going back to the start of alternative investments across hedge funds and private equity and private credit, was sophisticated investors that had long-term pools of capital and were looking to generate, in essence, risk-adjusted returns. So sophisticated strategies that could look at certain markets and say, over a 10 or 15 year timeframe, when I need this capital back for my end, you know, pension plan participants and or other constituents, the returns will be generated, as opposed to some of the risks that inherently sit in the public markets, where in any given period of time, the returns are a little bit less certain. And so that was the beginning of it. What we've seen to date is the differentiating between alpha and beta. So market-based returns being beta, and skill or kind of edge-based returns being alpha. Across alternatives, our various partner firms, as well as managers across the globe, are generating skill-based returns or alpha. And we think end clients continue to value that in a world of uncertainty in the public markets. And then the other driving force over time has really been both demographic and regulatory changes. On the regulatory side, as the banking crisis hit the world in 2008, a lot of lending activity and other things which happened in the banking system moved outside of the banking system into the private sphere. And that's created a big opportunity set in alternatives. both for firms to bring their expertise and add value, but also for investors to access what were some really attractive fee streams and other things that banks were doing for a long period of time. And also some market structure changes. You're seeing public companies by number count shrink materially over size, given the compliance and transparency in the public sphere, mm-hmm. and the number of private companies in the economy globally exploding. And so you need capital to fuel those companies' growth, fuel innovation and other things. And so private equity and private credit are really capitalizing on that opportunity set. So it comes from both the supply and demand side, but we think that's going to continue to grow materially over time.
Yeah, we're seeing all those forces play out in Australia, particularly about the public markets. Not a lot of, like the ASX, for example, we're not seeing a lot of listings. It's quite dead. And yeah, a lot of regulatory forces are in play at the moment, with banks stepping back from traditional lending, I guess. In the alternative space, it almost has a language of its own, doesn't it? So let's say, for example, in private equity, there's this term called GP staking. Can you explain what that is? Because I think it came from originally a term that came from US investment banking.
Sure. So GP staking, which is part of what Navigator does, is really a sub-strategy that's developed in private equity, where long-term locked-up capital funds, or in some cases permanent capital funds, are in essence providing growth capital and or investing in private alternative asset management firms. So we think of it very much just like growth equity into a technology company or to a services company, but it happens to be in the GP or the general partnership of an asset management firm.
If you can take us back, what GP means in the alts universe?
Sure. So when you think of a private asset manager, especially in alternatives, the business is organized as a partnership, as it was to the outset of all of these strategies decades and decades ago. And in the partnership, your investors are partners. They're called limited partners, where their role in the partnership is limited, generally to provide capital and some certain approvals, and obviously benefit from the returns in that partnership. And then the people or the investors who are managing that capital are often form an entity called the general partner, and the general partner is responsible for managing the fund. So when the term GP now, which is heavily used, generally means the business around managing capital. So those entities that were called the GP are responsible for managing the investment management activities.
So can you show us some examples of, like, say, how Navigator does some GP staking? Any recent ones lately?
Sure. Yeah. So we are super excited about a partnership we formed in March of this year with a US-based healthcare-focused investment firm, which again was looking for a strategic partner. And what we did was we bought what we would think of as a passive strategic minority interest in their GP or their general partner. And by buying 20 to 25% of the firm, we provided growth capital for them to grow and evolve as a partnership. And we align ourselves very closely with the founders of that firm. So in the 5, 10, 20 years to come, we can be as helpful and as strongly aligned with them as possible when they face things like succession planning, new product launches, how to retain and incentivize key talent, how to attack certain market opportunities with their LPs. They now have Navigator and our broad resources alongside of them to be helpful.
Let's turn quickly to private credit. What are some trends you're seeing in that space in terms of demand, growth, investors?
So private credit is one of the most, I think, commonly used but probably commonly misunderstood terms and alternatives. The private credit market is extremely broad and diverse. It encompasses non-bank lending, as you referred to earlier, across everything from cash flow lending to businesses, asset-backed lending to businesses, real estate lending, and a lot of other innovative niche types of strategies around royalties and things like that. And you're talking about end markets in the trillions of dollars. So this is a very broad business. What we've seen, again, as the main trend is why this has been a very active space is because a lot of the lending activity that's required in those sectors I just referenced are not happening at the banks. And so you have private pools of capital being established to provide that. And it's a really attractive space because for growing businesses who need capital for acquisition or other reasons, or for real estate developers and real estate businesses who need capital to, you know, revamp a property and or develop a property, or in other cases, you know, just transitions of certain assets, you can generate a really strong risk-adjusted return as a private credit manager if you have the expertise to understand the risks that you're underwriting. We believe that end clients or LPs continue to value the space because it does provide a very significant income level, typically at a spread on top of what's available in the public markets for a slightly more illiquidity premium, so a longer-term lock above the capital, and some more risk. And in today's world, we think, you know, income-based risk-adjusted returns are highly valued by clients. And so that's why you've seen so much growth in that area.
We've also seen in Australia a lot of private credit funds listing on the ASX or going public. Is that a trend that you are seeing in the US as well?
It is. I mean, in the US, we have public vehicles called business development companies, which I think are similar to the listed vehicles in some respects here, where you raise capital as a permanent capital to then go out and loans. And yes, it's a very, very large market in the US and one that makes a lot of sense from our standpoint.
Just a quick sidebar. Hedge funds are not as robust, I guess, in demand or don't make the headlines as much here in Australia. For example, here they're called long short funds as well. Can you just quickly paint us a picture of how big the hedge fund industry is in the US and the growth and why you find them attractive?
The hedge fund industry globally is about $5 trillion of AUM. It was the fastest growing and I would say most heavily invested in sector of alternatives pre the global financial crisis, so pre-2008.
Interesting.
What we've seen is that, frankly, the returns net of fees in many, many cases disappointed end investors.
Mm.
And in a low, if not zero interest rate environment that we saw for many years following the GFC, there was really no incentives in place to try and seek alpha from hedge funds. That's changed. With rates a little bit higher and with market conditions where they are today, we do see people valuing the types of return streams in hedge funds. But I think the reason why it hasn't been as popular was because of the market conditions for about 5-10 years following the global financial crisis.
So the question now, Ross, is where to from here? Alternatives are going gangbusters. What is your outlook for alternatives in 2026?
So we see continued growth really across alternatives. And the reasons for that are several. The first of which is that the market opportunity remains really robust across all these asset classes. Areas that we're very familiar with in hedge funds are seeing a really attractive opportunity set in terms of market volatility and other things going on in the public markets. As we stated earlier, in private credit, there is a tremendous need for the capital in those funds. And likewise, in private equity, the number of opportunities in the private market economy are massive, and they also need that capital. In addition, we see the adoption of alternatives continuing to widen. So you see wealth management clients continuing to learn more and value the role of alternatives in their portfolio. And we also see several pools of institutional capital globally, whether those be foundations and endowments, insurance companies, and other, you know, sovereign pools of capital, really valuing alternatives in an increasing manner and allocating capital in there. So those two forces really will drive growth, and it's an exciting outlook from here.
That's interesting. That's very interesting because, as I mentioned, private credit and private equity are the ones that are really dominating at the moment. But yeah, very interesting.
And they benefited from the same trend that I mentioned. In low interest rate environment, private credit's quite attractive because it generates a premium yield when yield is not available elsewhere. And private equity is quite attractive because they can generate really strong returns using leverage and other tools when interest rates are low. So you saw the growth of those assets in a low interest rate environment while hedge funds suffered. And I think we're seeing a bit of a rebalancing where there's a lot of opportunity all around right now.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time, Ross. Really appreciate it. And best of luck with your investor days.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.